All right. Well, I'd like to start off by running down a couple of lists of what I think are the key properties and spatial characteristics of urban soils, along with their controlling factors. Then I'll run through some illustrations of few examples based on the work that I've been doing on urban soils in downtown Detroit. And then I'm going to wrap things up with not a summary of what I already said, but rather a list of what I think are some ideas for future work. The talk's going to focus on morphology and genesis. I'm going to conveniently avoid the dodgy issue of classification. Key word is variability. That's really the source of all the difficulty and complexity. For me, the typical site would be a place where we've had buildings that are being demolished or have been demolished. Most of the waste material has been hauled away. Some clean fill dirt has been trucked in. And this would be soil or sediment or both, maybe a combination of both. It's been imported from off-site, maybe not very far away. The stuff has been graded back onto the site along with any waste building material and other artifacts that might be around. Typically, it's intentionally compacted with the idea of being a future construction site. The site may or may not be hydroseeded, and then it lays vacant maybe for many decades, during which time, of course, soil forming processes create an urban soil. Consequently, we see a tremendous amount of textural and compositional variability. A lot of waste building materials and other artifacts, typically what we see in Detroit, a lot of brick, cement, concrete, plaster, nails, miscellaneous wire material, pretty much anything and everything under the sun. We even found a credit card one time that was in such pristine condition that I thought I could have taken it to the party store next door and bought me a bottle of MD-5050 if I wanted to, except for the expiration date. Organic matter content all over the map. Depending on how much A-horizon material has been incorporated in with the fill. Typically, the C-horizons meet the characteristics for a densic horizon, partly because of the compaction, partly because of maybe the density or concentration of artifacts that are there. It forms a barrier to root penetration. We haven't actually measured the EH, but based on the kinds of things that we see in the soil, it looks to me like, at least in our part of the world, what we're dealing with is not so much reducing conditions, but rather, you know, I'm imagining a EH around maybe 300 millivolts, where there's no oxygen, but not really strongly reducing conditions either. pH and bases are elevated, mainly due to the weathering of cement and other calcareous building materials. Typically see high levels of exchangeable sodium due to de-icing salt, at least in our part of the world. I don't know where my cursor is on here. There it is. Lithologic discontinuities are common. Buried A-horizons are common. We typically see a bisequal or multisequal soil profile. And, of course, lead contamination is widespread. Two key controlling factors, the age of the site and the type and age of building materials. By age of the site, I mean how long the vacant lot's been sitting there. And, of course, that's going to determine the overall extent of pedogenic development, particularly A-horizons. And usually what we see is an AC profile. In Detroit, we've seen A-horizons 16 centimeters thick with 2% organic matter develop in as little as 15 years. Of course, that's going to determine the nature and extent of artifact weathering. Mostly what we see is the weathering of cement It's typically completely leached out of the A horizon, and the carbonate's reprecipitated in the C horizon to form a CK horizon. The iron oxide content is elevated. We're getting levels of like 2% using the Jackson DCB method, compared to your background or native soil level would be about 0.5%. So definitely elevated iron oxide content, presumably due to the weathering of nails and things like that. Also, anthropogenic microparticles we've been finding, and a lot of debris related to coal and coal burning, spent or unspent coal. You're more likely to find that in soils that have been sitting for, well, that were been sitting there since before World War II. The older the soil, usually the higher the level of lead contamination due to the use of leaded gasoline. And also, the older the soil, the more likely you are to see the effects of de-icing salt, although in soils older than maybe about since 1970, the effects are probably going to be all about the same. Also, depending on the kind of building that's being demolished, big difference depending on whether it's a wood frame building or brick and mortar. Most of our work has focused on brick and mortar construction because there's a lot more artifacts and a lot more interesting artifacts to look at. Drywall hasn't really been in widespread use until like the 1960s. So in older sites, we tend to see a lot of plaster and similar sorts of gypsum-based material, but with a different composition from what we would see with modern drywall. Of course, lead-based paint, widely used both interior and exterior from pretty much the 1920s until, well, on into the 1970s. It's estimated that something like 80% of all the homes in Detroit at least have some lead-based paint. We don't really start to see modern kind of wire nails until the 1880s. The nails that we see that are older than that are wrought iron nails that were handmade by a blacksmith somewhere. And, of course, galvanized nails appear a lot later. Similarly, with concrete or cement, the nature of the composition and the way it was made was a lot more primitive in the 1800s than it was certainly in the latter part of the 20th century. Bricks, we don't really see fired bricks until the 1920s, and that's had a big effect on the brick because the heating basically creates a siliceous coating on the brick, makes it a lot more weathering resistant than the older bricks from the 1800s. In terms of spatial characteristics, the two key controlling factors, as I see it, would be prior land use and the nature of the demolition and backfilling process. And we can see situations ranging from places where we had parkland or agricultural land with minimal disturbance to places that were commercial or industrial sites where we've had drastic amounts of disturbance. Demolition and backfilling process. We know that nature of the demolition process has varied over time. More recently, there's been, a legal requirement to recycle these waste building materials rather than leave them on site. So we see a big difference in the types and amount of building materials that have been left on site. In terms of the human transported material or the kind of fill material, the first Caterpillar tractor wasn't invented until 1929. So we don't really see a lot of disturbance by earth-moving equipment until really the 1930s. When we look at these older sites, the fill tends to be really thin, maybe 30 centimeters thick, not usually a lot of artifacts in it. Apparently they were moving dirt around, but they were using horses or maybe some of the primitive steam-powered tractors. I know Henry Ford had already invented a steam-powered tractor by 1905. Okay, well, Detroit is located in southeastern Michigan. Where is my cursor on this thing? There it is. And it's located right along the Detroit River, across from Windsor, Ontario, Canada. The oldest part of the city is located right in here. You notice where the roads are radiating out from a central point. That's pretty close to the spot where Antoine de la Mothe Cadillac, the French guy, founded Detroit in 1701. And that was the main part of the city up until about 1853. The rest of Detroit was pretty much farmland up until as recently as 1853. In Detroit, we can break down into three basic parts. The inner city is this part built before 1875, where most of our sites are located. The middle city is this part here that was built before 1890. There was a huge industrial boom in Detroit during the 1880s and 1890s as a result of the discovery of iron ore and other things. Became a manufacturing center. And then the rest of the city was built, which would be what, probably 90% of the city was built during the explosive boom of the auto industry in the 1920s and 30s. It's really pretty amazing how much development occurred. By 1930, Detroit was the most industrialized city in North America. Typical demolition site in Detroit, right across from Wayne State University, actually on Wayne State University. They don't necessarily always use wrecking balls. They may just use power shovels like this to knock the buildings down. Nowadays, they're kind of sorting the material out, apparently for recycling. You see they've got some, their metal debris. I can't find my cursor on this. There it is. There's this metal debris over here. Apparently somebody's going to scrap that wood. They're either going to haul off to a landfill or an incinerator. This is mostly what we see left on site. Brick, cinder block, cement, concrete, pieces of wood, bone, in some places, surprisingly, in some places quite a bit of bone. We always say it's Jimmy Hoffa when we find that. Nails, all kinds of wire. The contractor, the amount of waste material that's left in the site is going to vary with contractors too, as well as time. Some contractors leave a very large amount of material. This is what they call hardcore. They've done this on purpose with the idea of preparing it for future building construction. Other sites look like this. Pretty sparse. Looks like sparse building material, but don't be deceived. You may dig a hole and we found part of a brick wall right below the surface here. This site they've pretty much left to the weeds. This site down here, I don't know if you can see these buildings back here. These are left from the 1840s to probably 1880s. Really beautiful buildings. Some of them they've actually preserved. And here they've got a nice grass cover. The city actually comes in and mows this grass, which is kind of amazing to me. And here's a drastic example of an industrial site. You have to do a lot of digging just to get to the soil at that site. Here's one of my favorite cases of a site with a lot of lithologic discontinuities. This is one of the really old parts of Detroit. You can see there's been cut and fill, and then cut into the cut and fill, and cut and fill into the cut and fill. Pipes have been put in. Something caught fire, evidently. There was a building that burned up, paved it over with some asphalt, and then built another building on top of that. But surprisingly, in most of the inner city, the soil, this is kind of like Marbut's normal soil for the urban soil. It's a bisequal soil. It's fairly simple morphologically. We have a buried A horizon, and maybe a B or a C, which is the native soil. And then some building was demolished, in this case in the 1800s, which apparently all of our sites were buildings that were from the 1800s that were demolished. And then we have some fill, typically 50 to maybe 100 centimeters thick. It's about 60 centimeters right here at this site. There's an AP horizon developed in it and a CDK horizon underneath that. Typically loaded with artifacts, mainly brick, cement, concrete, stuff like that. This is actually a famous place, Brewster Projects. Of course, these are all derelict buildings now, but this was a famous place. A lot of Motown people lived in these apartments. Temptations, Supremes, Smokey Robinson, all those people grew up right in these buildings right here, believe it or not. We didn't know that when we dug the pit, though. We've spent a lot of time looking at the weathering of artifacts, and we've looked at a lot of different kinds of artifacts, but I've just kind of picked one example here to show you of just the kind of thing that you can do. This is such an interesting site. This is the Michigan Central's train station, derelict now for over 30 years, although they occasionally go in there and shoot a movie. I guess it's pretty spectacular inside. And we know that this park in front of it, that vacant lot, was residential, and there were buildings that were built in the 1840s to 1880s that were demolished when the train station was built in 1915. So presumably they demolished the buildings, fill was brought in, and we have an urban soil here that's almost 100 years old. And this was a field, a class in field archaeology back this summer, and the archaeologists came in here and conveniently dug all these holes for us. About 200 pits in this area. By the way, digging a pit in Detroit downtown is a little bit different from probably what you all are used to. Y'all probably don't wear a bulletproof vest when you're doing it. Just kidding. I wouldn't go to that place at night. Seriously. Serious as a heart attack. But check this out. This is what the soil profile looked like. And when I walked up to this and first looked in the hole, I thought, wow, you hit the natural soil, which I wasn't expecting. And this really does look like the typical soils that we see that are, Detroit, by the way, is built on an old lake bed, and we have these beach ridge deposits, shoreline deposits that are sandy. And this is what a typical soil profile 12,000 to maybe 13,000 years old looks like, and I thought that they had hit that. Although when I looked at this, I thought, wow, that's quite an A horizon you've got there. It's about 27 centimeters thick, and it looks like it's an argillic horizon below that, but upon closer inspection, we can see that it's just sand. It's a BW or color B. But I was scratching my head wondering why there was such a thick A horizon here, and all of a sudden somebody yelled out, "We got a pipe over here." So we started thinking, well, maybe this isn't in place. And then, well, we got not only a pipe, we got a sprinkler system with the date 1916 stamped on it. So come to find out, they actually put a sprinkler system, maybe one of the first ones anywhere in the country, to water. I guess it was a pretty elaborate garden out in front of this train station back in the day. So that kind of explains the A horizon. What you can't see in here, which, you know, the archaeologists have these screens, you know, and they dig it up and they sieve the soil out looking for artifacts, and they found that there's a layer of nails. It's these wrought iron blacksmith manufactured nails down along the base of the A horizon right in through this whole area. And we thought, oh, okay, well, so you can see that it leached and leached the iron, you know, in to create this B horizon, although I was still kind of scratching at my head how that could happen under oxidizing conditions. And check out these nails. Here's the one up in the upper right-hand corner there. This is what the square nails look like. This was out of the C horizon, hardly a speck of oxidation on it, but this is what they look like. Believe it or not, there's a nail in there. And you can see there's a crust of iron oxide cemented soil around that nail. Here's what it looks like up close. You can see several different phases in here. The brown stuff looks like a gothitic phase, and there's a orange kind of ferric hydroxide phase of some sort. And we made a thin section perpendicular to the long axis of the nail, and you can see the core of the nail down here, and you can see how there's these kind of concentric rings. But what's interesting, you can see the iron oxide is permeated out into the surrounding soil and cemented it together. Look at that ferric hydroxide stuff. Can you see the layering or lamination inside that? We were able to determine not only is that stuff crystalline, but it has this concentric zoning to it. So I don't have time to go on through the whole story, but the short answer is it looks like this is ferrolysis, and what we're seeing are these wet-dry cycles that's creating this lamination. Really interesting stuff. We did a simulated weathering experiment. We leached some soil with some nails we bought at Home Depot and simulated 30 years of leaching, and we leached it with a 2% sodium chloride solution. Did a pretty good job of duplicating the halos. It's not cemented, but there's a very interesting story here maybe next year. Hate to keep you hanging for a whole year. But also, we found these really interesting microparticles. This is out of the median of the fine sand. And the first thing I saw were these spheres. I thought, that doesn't look normal. And this is fly ash. These are weird angular ferruginous particles. These are kind of irregular, kind of siliceous particles with some sort of opaque inclusion. So we looked. I couldn't resist looking at these with the electron microscope and making some chemical analyses. And they're really beautiful. It looks like one of the moons of Jupiter. Look at this. Doesn't that kind of look like a ball of yarn? That's a ferruginous version. This is a siliceous. Some of them are angular. This is actually just a piece of coal. Some of the angular ferruginous stuff, you can see it definitely has a crystalline structure, which is kind of surprising. Anyways, we basically found that there were five very different chemically distinct kinds of microparticles. And so in terms of iron, silicon, and carbon, we're trying to study these in more detail. Don't have time to talk much about the lead. I better keep on moving here. Suffice it to say that even the really young demolition sites, less than 5 years old, are contaminated with lead, presumably from paint. The older sites are contaminated big time, 300 to 400 parts per million, probably by from automobile lead. The older the soil, the more lead there is. Probably about, we're seeing 10 to 30% of which is bioavailable. Anyway, just to kind of sum up, what we put together in Detroit is an urban chrono sequence. So far, we've been able to look at soils at these vacant sites going back 100 years, and presumably by looking back 100 years, we can predict what the soils are going to look like 100 years in the future. I think there's a lot more that can be done with that kind of thing. The oldest brick buildings in Detroit go back to like 1843, so we're hoping we can get a chrono sequence even a little bit older than that. A lot more needs to be done with phase identification, especially phosphate minerals and phosphate, phosphorus in general. We don't seem to know very much about that. Soil micromorphology, I think, is something we could study a lot more, soil thin sections. Biominerals produced by bacteria and other microbes, I think, would be a fertile area for study. And don't forget our friend the earthworm. I think there's still a lot more that can be done with that. A lot of worms that we see in Detroit soils, although there's no native soils to Detroit. Those were all brought over by the French and British settlers in the 1700s and 1800s. It's an invasive species in our part of the world. Resuspension of soil lead, particularly from demolition sites, I think is something that needs to be looked at. We know that children's blood lead levels are still elevated despite a lot of abatement that's been done. More work looking at the effects of artifact weathering. We know that the weathering of cement and iron apparently seems to be beneficial in terms of being immobilizing agents for lead, and that they might actually be beneficial to leaving artifacts in there. And in Detroit, we actually have 40 square miles, about a third of the city now is vacant land, due to the massive amounts of demolition that have taken place. And the new plans for Detroit actually include urban farms. And so I think there's a lot more that could be done in terms of urban gardening and even urban farming on a fairly large scale for by urban scale, urban standards. I guess I better quit there, so thank you very much.
We have time for maybe one question before our next speaker comes up, if anyone has a question.
This is a really interesting building here. This is across from the train station. It's one of the buildings that was left from the 1800s. And somebody went around behind it and basically took the whole back of the building off, dissected it for some sort of art project. And you can actually go in here and look at the details of how they built these buildings in the 1800s. It was built, when this was built, there wasn't any electricity. That wasn't in Detroit until 1893 when Edison started his illumination company. So you can actually see when they first put the electrical power into this building. It's really interesting. Oh, we hit almost every pit in the inner city. We hit the buried soil with Crotovina coming out of those. So there were already worms there in the 1700s and 1800s, evidently.
Okay. Thank you very much.